and Norm Shealy.
NormShealy.com.
You are listening to Infinite Consciousness, your infinite access to the world
of the mind.
Welcome to Infinite Consciousness tonight, and thanks for listening. This is Eva Herr, and we have with us tonight Christina Vasilik, and we're going to talk about treating addiction holistically. How are you, Christina?
I'm great, Eva. Thank you. It's so nice to be on your show.
Well, thanks for coming on. This is a really important topic to me. I think it's something that touches everyone's life, so I'm happy to have you. So before we get started, why don't you tell us a little bit about you and how you came to do what you do and where people can find you.
All right. Well, I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist in the state of Colorado. I've been licensed for about 25 years, and I'm also a certified nutritionist. And as a nutritionist, I specialize in mental health issues and in addiction recovery. I got into this many years ago by recognizing how many emotional and behavioral issues are actually due to imbalances in the brain that come from either what we eat or don't eat and other nutrient imbalances.
So, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, this so fascinated me, both by looking at the impact of my own life as well as that on other people, that I decided to get myself trained and integrated into my work as a therapist.
Well, it's important to me, too. As most of my listeners probably know, you know, one of my children suffered from an addiction, and you have been helping us with that problem, along with a couple of other of your colleagues that are with the Alliance for Addiction Solutions. Do you want to talk about that for a minute and tell us what that is?
Yes. Several of us across the country who integrate nutrition into our work with addicts got together about 3 to 4 years ago to form a nonprofit organization that's now international. And the purpose of the Alliance for Addiction Solutions is to educate the public that there are options in addiction treatment, and that if you address the brain as well as the psyche and the spirit, people have a much more successful and stable recovery. And so we want to both educate the public as well as other treatment providers and provide education and resources.
So I don't want to get into Bill W. because I talked to Andrew Saul and we got into that Bill W.'s work the other night when we talked about Abraham Hoffer.
Mm-hmm.
But I do want to ask you, most addiction therapies, including AA, will tell you that addiction is not a treatable problem. Is that true?
Is not treatable, you said?
Yes.
No.
But you can't get well.
I think one can absolutely get well. Now, getting well does not necessarily mean that you can go out and continue using alcohol or the drugs you've become addicted to in the past, because we do end up with sensitized brains. However, that said, if you work on rebalancing the brain, addressing the underlying biochemical issues that led to the addiction in the first place, people can live happy, stable, fulfilled, energetic lives without having to constantly focus on staying away from their previous drug of choice. It becomes a moot issue. The cravings go away, the withdrawals are way gone, and they no longer have to struggle with life as a sober addict. They actually get to live life as a person. It's like, have you ever seen a three-legged stool with only two legs or only one leg? If you try to sit on the stool, if you put a lot of effort and focus, you might be able to stay upright, but it's hard. But if you put all three legs in place, then you're nice and stable and balanced, and you can get on with whatever you're doing. What's the same thing with an addictive illness? Everybody says that addiction is a biochemical, a biopsychosocial illness, but very few programs or providers address the biochemical aspect of this illness. They just address the psychosocial spiritual pieces. And they can do that very well. But again, it's like sitting on a three-legged stool with only two legs. If you're missing a leg, you're going to be wobbly. As soon as you bring in the biochemical piece adequately and appropriately, as well as addressing the other two legs, then people can have a stable, successful recovery.
What is the biochemical aspect? What do you mean when you say that?
Well, there's several pieces to it. There's several layers. The first layer has to do with neurotransmitters. Neurotransmitters are the chemicals in our brain that mediate mood. They allow us to feel calm or energized. They allow us to think clearly. They allow us to sleep. And they allow us to deal with stress in a calm, focused, effective way. Our brain's job is to allow us to cope with stress gracefully. However, to do that, our brain has to be fed. The neurotransmitters are made out of amino acids, which come from protein, in the presence of vitamins and minerals. If, for whatever reason, we don't have enough neurotransmitters, it could be genetics, it could be stress, it could be malnutrition, we're going to have symptoms. We're going to have trouble sleeping, or we're going to be anxious, or we're going to be tired. Then we will turn to a mood-altering substance to help bring our brain back into balance. This is what addictive substances do. They fire neurotransmitters. They help us feel better, but at a price. And
can I just say one thing here?
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to get off topic. I want you to keep going, but I just want to say that that includes simple things like caffeine and sugar, right?
It certainly does. And cigarettes.
People don't think about those things as being part of their addiction, but they are. I've seen it with my daughter. Now go back to what you're saying.
Right. Serious addictions, because people will often quit their drug of choice, say alcohol, and turn to sugar and become just as addicted to sugar as they were to the alcohol because their neurotransmitters are still depleted. And this is the piece that a lot of people don't understand and isn't taught. So when you use a mood-altering chemical, it works by firing one of these brain chemicals, but it depletes it. It's like you fill your car up with gas, and then you go for a long trip, and your gas tank gradually gets lower and lower and lower. If you don't refill your car with gas, you're going to get into trouble. And this is what happens with addiction. The reservoir gets lower and lower and lower, and then the brain decides it needs a smaller reservoir, a smaller gas tank. Well, it won't get you as far. And so gradually over time, people become dependent upon the chemical to feel good, to function, to sleep, to have energy, to think. And the brain cannot by itself restore itself. So you go off the drug because it's getting you into trouble, and your brain's starving. This is what withdrawal symptoms are. The brain says, I have to have the drug to function. And so people either suffer through withdrawal or they go back to using. And this is the dreadful bind that addiction puts onto people.
So where do they start, Chris? I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, no. What was your question?
I was going to say, where do they start? I mean, how do they figure out which neurotransmitter they're short on, whether it's dopamine or serotonin, or where do they start?
Well, the easiest place to start is by understanding the actual drug of choice and what neurotransmitters the drugs fire. So, for instance, cocaine and meth fire dopamine and norepinephrine, so it depletes those neurotransmitters. Alcohol depletes things across the board, so does marijuana. Ecstasy primarily depletes serotonin. Your benzodiazepines like Valium or Ativan depletes GABA. So the way you start is by identifying by symptoms and by drug of choice what neurotransmitters need support, and then you bring in the precursor amino acid. So dopamine and norepinephrine make themselves out of an amino acid called L-tyrosine in the presence of vitamins and minerals. Amazingly enough, you can take this amino acid. You can buy it over the counter. You can take it, and within 10 to 15 minutes, it appears that the brain picks it up, turns it into the neurotransmitter, and people feel an effect within 15 minutes.
Really?
It's astonishing. And so by using these amino acid precursors, you begin to refill the reservoir, and then it tells the brain to make a bigger one. And now you've really turned around that vicious downward spiral, and you're building an upward spiral towards health and well-being.
Can we talk about one thing right here?
Yes.
With my child, she started taking L-tyrosine because that was her drug of choice, was one of those that you mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
And she, I just want to tell my listening audience, she got jittery on the inside. Her mind felt good. She said, "Mom, I feel like a 10, with 10 being the best, but on the inside, I feel jittery." So I just, because people are going to run out and do this, you know, they're going to try to do these things, kind of things sometimes.
Yeah.
So I want them to know that all they, and let's say this, we're neither one of us are medical doctors. We're just giving you information so that you can know that there's hope and you can make intelligent decisions. So
absolutely.
Anything that we provide you on this show is not diagnosing you or treating you. We're simply providing information. That being said, my daughter felt jittery, and so we were told, just back off. You have to play with your dosage to find out what's right for you. So don't think that something's wrong or that it's not working if you get, you know, some side effects, because you will do that possibly. Just know that the dosage has to be adjusted by your doctor. Right, Christina?
Precisely. And in fact, the jitteriness indicates that it actually is working. You're just getting a little too much. And so you lower the dose. There's a small percentage of people who will get jittery on L-tyrosine and need to turn to a different amino acid that boosts dopamine but blocks norepinephrine. Norepinephrine is one of the neurotransmitters that can make us anxious or jittery. L-theanine is a amino acid that builds dopamine but blocks norepinephrine. So for some people prone to anxiety, it's a better choice than L-tyrosine.
Okay. So how do you, let's go on to the other drugs, just so we'll know, the alcohol and the other drugs. What would they do for those?
Okay. So for instance, alcohol, since it fires so many of the different neurotransmitters at the same time, you really need to address the brain across the board. So you need to replace the norepinephrine and dopamine with preferably L-tyrosine. You need to replace GABA with a amino acid actually called GABA that becomes the neurotransmitter that brings calming. So
Does that actually absorb or cross the blood-brain barrier? Some people say yes, some people say no. What do you know?
You know, some people say yes and some people say no. I don't really know. The theory is that if you have any type of leaky gut, that you can absolutely absorb GABA. I found that even people with the healthiest gut have a improvement in mood when they take GABA. So I'm very pragmatic. If it works, use it. And if it works without side effects, definitely use it. Again, is a small percentage of people who take high-dose GABA who will end up getting panic attacks or anxious. So we always recommend starting with a lower-dose GABA, so anywhere between, say, 100 milligrams to 200 milligrams GABA at any one time. Now, unfortunately, if you go into GNC to buy your GABA, they only sell GABA in 750 milligram capsules. So GNC is probably not the best place to buy your GABA for that reason. I also recommend GABA formulas that have other amino acids in it that also build GABA. So it has GABA, taurine, glycine. All of these are amino acids that help produce calm in the body without overloading the system.
Okay. So what
and
else?
Then you can go for a serotonin support. So symptoms of low serotonin are anxiety, agitation, obsessive thinking, irritability all the way to rage, and trouble sleeping because your thoughts go round and round and round and round. If you have those symptoms, then taking either 5-HTP or L-tryptophan will raise your serotonin levels and remove those symptoms.
We didn't talk about what symptoms represent low dopamine or low norepinephrine. We talked about how to treat it, but we didn't talk about what the symptoms were.
Okay, so the symptoms of low dopamine and low norepinephrine are a slow, sluggish type of depression. You don't want to get out of bed. You have trouble enjoying your normal activities. You are apathetic. Your drive has gone away. So it's very interesting. Some people will use marijuana to give them drive, energy, and focus. Most people think of marijuana as a drug, as a mellow drug. And that's true for some people. For some people, marijuana will fire serotonin and GABA. But for other people, marijuana will fire dopamine and norepinephrine. And for those people, you want to give them the L-tyrosine to replace dopamine.
I did not know that. That's interesting.
I found that fascinating.
I did not know. So how does it... Well, we don't have to get into how. I don't guess it really matters, but I could pick your brain about that for hours. So where do they find, do they do more than just these amino acids? Do they require minerals and vitamins, and if so, which ones? And how do they know what to dose? Is there a test?
Well, they do require the cofactors. So the cofactors are the minerals and the vitamins, which we should be getting in our food. But how many people, Eva, do you know who are eating 7 servings of fruits and vegetables a day?
I don't even know very many people eating real fruits and vegetables that aren't modified.
Exactly. We're supposed to do it, and even I, who knows better, I'm lucky if I get 4 in a day. So the other issue is not just what we're eating, but are we digesting and absorbing it? So many addicts, and especially alcoholics, have dramatically damaged the entire digestive tract. And so you might start eating the right food, but that doesn't mean you're necessarily absorbing it and digesting it. So adding digestive enzymes is very helpful. Healing the intestines and the stomach lining with an amino acid called L-glutamine and aloe vera and some other herbs helps heal things so that you're now actually absorbing the food that you're digesting. And then supplementing with vitamins and minerals across the board both helps the healing process and allows the brain to repair itself. So I recommend a good multivitamin mineral formula. And by good, I mean one that has been shown to dissolve easily. If you go into a good vitamin store, you can ask the clerk for their recommendations.
I have a recommendation there. I have a friend, his name is Dr. Mark Naveau, who's a neuro researcher, and he was just down here last weekend, or weekend before last, and he's developing an angstrom mineral and vitamin product. So you know that's going to cross the cell membrane.
Exactly.
If anybody's interested, it's called Bio-Nutrigen. They come in a spray and they taste really good, and they're angstrom quality.
That's wonderful.
Product.
I think sprays are a very, very good idea. So you want to getting initially an early withdrawal, you want a lot of vitamin C. So a lot of vitamin C can be up to 18 grams per day. Now, that's a lot of vitamin C. You know you've gotten too much if you get diarrhea. So maybe the first week of withdrawal from alcohol or other drugs, you can tolerate 18 grams just fine. And then as you begin to get better, the diarrhea sets in, you lower your dosage of the vitamin C because your body doesn't need that much anymore. you want a good 100 milligrams per day of vitamin B6. You want, you know, your 400 IUs of vitamin E. You need at least 1,000 milligrams of calcium and magnesium. Magnesium helps relax muscles. It helps calm you down. It helps with sleep. A lot of people don't realize how important magnesium is. Now, if you get too much magnesium, you also get diarrhea. That's good if you've been constipated. Not so good if it won't stop. So getting a good multivitamin, taking it several times a day, taking your digestive enzymes, and then taking either fish oil or flaxseed oil. Fish oil and flaxseed oil have been shown to help the neurotransmitters transmit appropriately. They get into the brain cell membrane, and they help it work better. So a lot of people don't realize that fish oil or flaxseed oil are among the best antidepressants out there. So whenever I have a depressed client, whether they're an addict or not, I will put them on fish oil and between 3 to 6 grams a day. So most of the low capsules are 1 gram. So 3 to 6 of those pills a day as an antidepressant. They kick in about 3 days, the fastest antidepressant out there.
I knew they helped inflammation, but I had no idea they did that.
Mm-hmm. A lot of research. Now, the research started with 9 grams a day. That's actually 1 tablespoon, but which is fine. If you would prefer to take the liquid oil to taking the pills, then 1 tablespoon is a great dose. But I find that most people show improvement with 6 capsules a day. You want to take it with food because it is a food. It has to be digested.
I have a question here. When we talk about fish oil, and we won't even get into quality, we will assume that you mean pharmaceutical-grade quality on this fish oil.
I do. That's been screened for mercury.
So a lot of people don't know that there's a difference between what we call, quote, fish oil and cod liver oil, that they're different and
mm-hmm.
they do different things. So which one are you talking about? Or both?
You know, in some ways, they're interchangeable. The difference is that much cod liver oil also contains high levels of vitamin A and vitamin D. If you don't have enough vitamin D or vitamin A in your diet, then that's a very good way to go. I'll recommend either. You know, some people prefer a particular brand or a price. But what you really have to screen for is that the label says that there's no mercury in the product.
Okay. So is there a test that they can take so that they have an idea where to start? A mineral test or a neurotransmitter test? Is there any kind of test that you know of?
There are some nutrient tests out there. The neurotransmitter tests do not have a good reputation for being accurate. So there are some urine neurotransmitter tests, but the consensus appears to be that they can't accurately tell you whether you actually need that neurotransmitter. But once you start taking amino acids and you look at how the test changes, if you repeat the test, say, every 2 months, your numbers mm-hmm. will change. And that actually, if you look at the way the numbers change, that's most helpful. It's actually really good to go by symptoms. There are several books out there that give guidelines for doing amino acid therapy. My two favorite are 7 Weeks to Sobriety by Joan Matthew Larson. It's really the Bible for anybody doing nutrient therapy with addicts. And The Mood Cure by Julia Roth.
Okay.
And getting one of those books. There are several other very good books on the market as well, but these books will sort of take you step by step through the process of rebalancing your brain chemicals.
Okay. I just want to mention there are two people in the Alliance for Addiction Solutions that also have a book, you know, Hyla Cass.
Mm-hmm.
And think of the name of her book. It's Hyla, H-Y-L-A-C-A-S-S. And
she
Pam
has a
Colleen.
Book called, she has a book called Natural Highs.
Yes, and that's I enjoyed reading that book.
Mm-hmm.
And I enjoyed Pam Colleen's book, Addiction. I can't remember the name of that either, but
Charlie
I enjoyed
Camp
that
has a book
too.
Called End Your Addiction Now.
Who?
Dr. Charles Gant.
Okay.
He's a functional doctor in the Alliance, and his book is called End Your Addiction Now.
He's the one doing
well.
The metal toxicity, right?
Mm-hmm.
The metals. Do you know about that? Can you tell us about that?
Yes. Well, now we're getting to the second layer of addressing the biochemical issues with addiction. So the first thing you want to do is balance and repair and restore neurotransmitters. But sometimes the story doesn't end there. Sometimes people still have mood and behavioral issues anyway. They still have cravings for their drug of choice. And that's because there may be other biochemical issues going on, one of which is heavy metal toxicity. So we get heavy metals all through our environment and in utero. We can get mercury. Mercury will go through the placenta wall and contaminate babies before they're born. That's pretty scary.
Mm-hmm.
So mercury is a big contaminant, but so is lead, cadmium, and many other heavy metals will create mood and behavior disturbances that are very severe. And those drive addictive behaviors. And so it may be that people need to remove the heavy metals from their body. There are several ways to identify heavy metals. Unfortunately, conventional doctors don't appear to understand this process very well. So they will recommend a serum heavy metal test. Well, that works, so you take the blood and you look at how many heavy metals are in the blood at that moment. That's fine if you have an immediate exposure to the heavy metal. So if you're currently being exposed to mercury or you're currently being exposed to lead, it will show up in your blood. However, if you were exposed in the past and it's stored in your tissues, it will not necessarily show up in a serum blood test. So it may look like you don't have any heavy metal toxicity, whereas in fact you do. So functional doctors and other nutritionists who work with this on a regular basis do a 24-hour challenge test. It's a urine test for heavy metals. That the test isn't perfect, and the more experience you have in interpreting such tests, the better job you'll do. But it does appear to be a better indicator for whether there's heavy metal toxicity going on.
What about the hair analysis test?
Hair analysis is another one as well that will show stored heavy metals in your tissues. And again, it's not a perfect test. There isn't a perfect test. But it gives you a pretty good indication of what's there. Did you have another question about heavy metals?
I was going to say, how do you pull them out? I thought you had stopped. Go ahead, please.
Yeah. You pull them out using different chelating materials. Now, you want to pull out heavy metals very, very slowly, or you will make yourself much sicker in the process. And some people with heavy metal toxicity are very, very ill to begin with. So you can begin with green vegetables, with sea vegetables, and things like kelp, chlorella, spirulina, some of the herbs like cilantro, or Epsom salt baths will very gently begin to pull heavy metals out of the stored tissue. Or that are stored in the tissue. And then after you've started that process, then you can bring in some heavier chelating chemicals that will pull it out faster. And Dr. Gant has a very good protocol for this process.
Now, when you say chemicals, we don't mean pharmaceuticals, right? We mean
no.
Some kind of natural minerals or other vitamin supplements?
There are three specific ones, but this is not really my area, so I can't quite remember what they are.
So we're not talking about pharmaceuticals or chemicals.
No.
We're talking about natural things.
Well, we're talking about, there's one chemical I think is EDTA.
Oh, yeah.
Right. And then there's two others in that category, and I'm not remembering right now what they are.
Okay. Now, is it okay if you get really sick? Because my daughter did this.
Mm-hmm.
She started taking the supplements. She took them for a couple of weeks, and you couldn't even tell anything was happening. And then last week, one day, it hit her like a tornado. And she was so nauseous. She was in bed 24/7, didn't get out of bed, so had to go to the bathroom for 5 days.
Mm.
So is that okay to feel that way? Because I don't want people to get scared off and not do it. She said, Mom, this is really bad. But yesterday she got up and said, I feel like $1 million.
Absolutely. Sometimes the process of detoxifying can make you that sick. We want to try to slow it down enough so that people don't get that sick, but sometimes we just have no control over the process, and that's what happens. But the thing to remember is that it does pass. And once it passes, then you really do start feeling much, much better. And cumulatively feel better. You continue to feel better. Now, one of the issues that's often connected with heavy metal toxicity is candida overgrowth. You know, candida albicans is the yeast that's supposed to live in our intestines and the warm, moist parts of our body. Well, they're supposed to stay in check, but sometimes they overgrow. And have you ever made bread? You know, where
yes.
You open the package of yeast and you put it in the warm water, you stir it around and it sort of just sits there looking brown and gooey, and then you add sugar to it. The moment you add sugar, it starts bubbling and growing, and then you mix it into the bread, and that's what allows the bread to rise because it creates gas. Well, it does the same thing in our intestines. If we've killed off our good bacteria with antibiotics, stress, or drugs, including alcohol, and add a lot of sugar, either in the form of alcohol or sugar itself or refined carbohydrates, the yeast very happily grow and grow and grow. And they grow beyond the bounds of the intestine. It's been shown that they can actually change shape and get into the bloodstream. Well, they definitely do not belong in the bloodstream. And so they create immune responses all through the body that can create fatigue, tiredness, mood swings, just weirdness, joint pain, spots in front of your eyes. It can make people very, very ill. Well, one of the things that apparently also happens is the yeast can bind to heavy metals and keep them from affecting the body. And so, you know, again, more research is needed here, but there appears to be a relationship between heavy metal toxicity and candida overgrowth.
That's an amazing piece of information.
It is. And it's not one that a lot of people know. And as I said, there does need to be more research. But it appears to be very promising to work at both at the same time, removing the heavy metals and the candida. Now, Dr. Gant's protocol has you remove the candida first, and he finds it easier that way to remove the heavy metals. Other people do it at the same time. So a large percentage of alcoholics and sugar addicts get candida overgrowth. And so that's one of the things that has to be addressed in this second layer of treatment as well. The third thing that needs to be addressed is food allergies. Because people are very aware that certain foods can cause anaphylactic shock. You know, like if you eat shrimp or peanuts, you're liable to be dead in the next 5 minutes. I'm not talking about that type of food allergy. That's mediated in a very specific way in the immune system. But there's another type of food allergy and food intolerance that's mediated differently. It's not going to kill you in 5 minutes, but it is liable to make you very sick. And it is liable to actually create psychiatric symptoms. So, for instance, I know people who, when they eat milk products or wheat, hear voices and have other psychotic symptoms.
Really?
Isn't that amazing?
I want to tell you something that happened to me day before yesterday, and it's happened before, but I only put the pieces together day before yesterday, because I want my listeners to get this. I can't eat corn anymore, or any corn product in the last 5 to 6 or 7 years, probably 5 or 6 years, because of the genetically modified corn. People say, oh, it's organic. Well, how can you have an organic product with pollination across the street? You know,
That's right.
A GMO product. So anyway, I made some fish the other night, and I couldn't resist, and I battered it with cornmeal.
Mm-hmm.
Within 15 minutes, the bottom of my back, down near my hips, hurt so bad that I couldn't stand up anymore.
Mm.
And I've noticed that 3 times I've done that when I ate cornmeal. So food allergies, I believe, I want people to understand, can manifest in ways other and different than what you expect them to be.
Absolutely.
And who would ever think a food allergy would cause your back to hurt?
Well, precisely. And milk used to cause severe muscle pain in myself. But I have a corn story as well. I'd been depressed a large part of my life, but I had never been suicidal. And one summer, this was a long time ago, but one summer, I woke up one morning, and I was acutely, overtly suicidal. And it was only because I knew myself pretty well and was pretty balanced and stable that I didn't go out and act on it immediately, but the urge was that strong.
Mm-hmm.
And it stayed that strong for about 6 weeks, and then my nutritionist brain clicked in, and I thought, this is really weird. Nothing in my life has changed. My stress has not increased. I haven't gone anywhere. This has got to be coming from food. I already knew that I had food allergies that can cause depression in me. And so I thought, well, what am I eating differently? And I realized I was in California. It was summer. There was lots of fresh, juicy, sweet corn on the market. I loved corn. So I had moved from having corn like once a week to having it fresh and raw almost every day. And I thought, corn is one of the top 5 allergens in this country. I wonder. And so what I did was I completely removed all corn from my diet. Now, I didn't realize that table salt had corn in it. Apparently, the iodine is bound. I know. It's bound to the sodium chloride with dextrose, which is a corn product. But I almost completely removed corn from my diet. And within 5 days, the suicidal thoughts and feelings completely went away.
Really? That's amazing.
I was still depressed, but I was used to that. But the suicidal piece was completely gone. So I stayed off corn for about 4 years. And then my husband and I were at a Mexican restaurant, and there were these luscious, beautiful, freshly fried corn chips on the table. And I looked at him, and I said, it's been 4 years. This allergy's either gone or it's not, and there's only one way to find out. So I said, if I get a reaction, please remind me that it's just a food allergy. And by that point in my life, all the underlying depression had been resolved and was gone. So I was a very happy camper. There was very little stress in my life. I was happy. I ate the corn chips, and within 4 hours, I was lying on the floor of my bedroom, wailing, trying to remind myself, yes, that this was just a food allergy and would go away.
That's an amazing story.
Yeah. And that's the power of food allergies.
That's an amazing story. Well, you never told us where to find you, by the way.
Well, I have a
practice. People don't know who they're talking to.
Okay. I have a practice in Aurora, Colorado, which is right next door to Denver. And I have a website, which is ChristinaBeselock.com. And would you like me to give you my phone number?
Whatever you want people to have.
Well, I'd love your hearers to have my phone number. It is 303-888-9617. And I'm very happy to do nutritional consults over the telephone.
So, Christina, is it possible for an alcoholic to stop drinking or drug addict to stop using and not have those crazy, horrible withdrawal symptoms or DTs?
Yes, it is.
And where do they start?
They start by finding a practitioner who really understands amino acid therapy and working with them. If you really have no access to anybody, there's several of us who do work over the telephone. You can find us in the referral directory through the Alliance for Addiction Solutions.
What is their website, please?
It's Alliance for Addiction Solutions .org.
And there's a directory there, I believe, if I'm not mistaken.
There's a directory of people from all over the world who work with amino acids and addiction.
Now, I know that there are a group of you that have regular phone conferences. Is that available to anybody, or is that just available to practitioners? Can you
That's available
tell us
to anybody.
About that?
Yes. That's available to anybody who becomes a member of the Alliance. Membership dues are $100 a year. And as soon as you've joined, you have access to the monthly teleconferences, to articles and other information on the web. And we're trying to get local chapters of the Alliance going in different areas.
How would somebody go about helping you do that?
By giving me a call and by going online, becoming a member of the Alliance. I'm the treasurer, and I also work with membership. So you're welcome to call me. And again, my phone number and contact information is on the Alliance website as well.
Also, there's a group that you've worked with in Denver, the Raleigh House. Can you tell us a little bit about that group?
Yes. The Raleigh
House. I love that place.
It's a pretty nice place. It's one of the newest residential treatment programs in the country that does amino acid and nutrient therapy for recovering addicts and alcoholics. And I've worked with them as a nutritionist for about a year now, and we've developed protocols to help heroin users get off heroin with minimal withdrawal symptoms. Now, you're still going to have some discomfort, but with the right nutrient protocol, we can minimize the discomfort. There are other residential programs around the country, and they're listed in the Alliance, that do that as well. Now, for people who are very late-stage addicts or have become very ill, the other alternative is to go to one of these programs that does IV amino acid therapy, intravenous. And I used to work for one of these programs, Excel Treatment Program in Denver, for about 3 years. And it's really miraculous. Somebody with late-stage alcoholism who's very, very ill, who can't get up in the morning without drinking, comes in and does five days of 4-hour IV drips each day. And by day five, they're not shaking, they're not craving, they're completely out of withdrawal, they're clear, they've got energy, and they're beginning to be ready to move on with their lives. The downside is that people get so well so fast, they don't realize that they still have recovery work to do, that they still have to address the other two legs of the stool, you know, the emotional and the social and the spiritual leg of the stool.
So I have a question here. Mm-hmm. When it comes to a program like we're talking about, like the holistic program of detoxing and nutrition, you know, when you go to AA only, the traditional mm-hmm. addiction treatment programs, whatever they are,
yes,
everything's about will.
Everything
is about will. Is will just as predominant when you use holistic treatment programs? Does that make sense? Does it take as much will when you use holistic programs as it does when you're doing a traditional program? Or do you kind of, like, get better whether you want to or not?
Let's put it this way.
Does that make sense?
It does make total sense. When you are feeding your brain what your brain needs, you actually have access to your true will for the first time in your life. You get to make real choices about your own well-being for the first time in a long time, rather than the addiction making your choices for you.
That makes a lot of sense.
And it's wonderful. Once people's brains are free and clear, they can make use of the skills taught in traditional programs and taught in AA and other 12-step groups.
I had an addict email me yesterday, and I just got a simple email, and it mm-hmm. said, "I don't understand myself."
That's right.
And that made so much sense to me. Of course, this person doesn't want to take a step to get help yet, but still that made so much sense to me, and so it made me wonder, if a person gets holistic treatment, will it start making them better, like antibiotic on a cut, whether you mean for it to or not? And you just answered the question. Thank you.
Actually, there was some research done several years ago with alcoholic Swedish fishermen who had no idea that they were being studied for their drinking habits. And they were given evening primrose oil. Now, evening primrose oil is one of these nutrients that can help certain alcoholics tremendously, especially those from the Scandinavian countries, Ireland, and coastal Native Americans. So they gave these Swedish fishermen evening primrose oil over a course of 3 months, and lo and behold, these fishermen, who alcohol had never been discussed with them, gradually their alcohol consumption decreased over the 3 to 6 months of the study without their real awareness. It's just that they didn't want to drink anymore, or they didn't want to drink as much anymore. So yes, even if you have no intention of getting well, like these fishermen, it can still change your brain chemistry to the point that your brain no longer wants, needs, or craves alcohol or other substances.
So I have a question. The evening primrose oil, does it affect neurotransmitter levels, or does it have something to do with hypoglycemia? And we
Neither.
Haven't even talked about hypoglycemia.
Right, and we really should be before we get off the phone here. It actually addresses a completely different part of the brain, something called prostaglandins. And we've got three, these are other chemicals in the brain, two of which are anti-inflammatory and one of which is pro-inflammatory. Well, the anti-inflammatory ones actually mediate depression. If you don't have enough of them in your brain, you're going to get depressed. This is why fish oil is an antidepressant. Well, evening primrose oil affects another one of these prostaglandins and feeds it and will take away depression in some people.
Okay,
it will
also
help support your liver.
Well, is that one of those things that I recall has something to do with women's hormones?
It does.
So if, can you do that if you are a woman and have hormonal issues?
Yes, you
if
can.
If you're an alcoholic woman or what drug addict woman, and you use evening primrose oil, is it going to mess up your hormone levels? Or
no, it's going to help your hormone levels. It's going to help PMS. It's going to help hot flashes. And it's going to help menopause in most people.
How does it? Does it affect estrogen, or what does it do?
It affects these prostaglandins, which are a thing unto themselves. So we really can't. It's a little complicated biochemistry here.
Okay.
But it makes a tremendous difference. And it's important for people to realize that premenstrual women are more likely, well, women are more likely to relapse premenstrually than at other times in their cycle. And
that's
so it's really important for recovering women to write down on their calendar when their period is about to start and count back 5 to 10 days and to see that as a high-risk period for them for relapse.
5 to 10 days before your period starts?
Yep.
That's what you said? Okay.
Now, one of the reasons for this has to do with hypoglycemia, which you mentioned. And that is when our blood sugar gets too low, we tend to crave our drug of choice. And so it's very important for any recovering person, even recovering sex addicts, to keep their blood sugar very stable by eating protein and complex carbs, you know, like fruit or whole grains, every 4 hours. Premenstrual women need to be eating protein and complex carbs every 3 hours because our blood sugar can become that destabilized premenstrually.
Okay, that's very interesting. I didn't ask you about, and we don't have too much longer, but I didn't ask, let's look at the clock here. We have about probably 5 or 6 minutes, if that long. I wanted to ask you about people who are alcoholics with anger management problems. What can you recommend for that, or what does that tell you, or how can those people help themselves?
Well, that's a bit of a complicated picture. If you talk to domestic violence professionals, and I have been one, the consensus appears to be that domestic violence and anger issues exist independently of the addiction. So that even if you get clean and sober, you will most likely still have anger issues. I think that's true when the anger comes from power and control issues in the person, that the power and control issues are there independently. However, people who are alcoholic, for instance, because they are allergic to alcohol, some alcoholics are alcoholic because they're allergic to it, have mood changes very quickly. And very frequently, the mood change will be towards anger, irritability, and violence. Those people, once they stop drinking and stop exposing their brain to this unbalancing substance, their anger and their irritability will go away. The same thing is true if the anger and irritability is coming from low serotonin levels. If you raise serotonin levels through using the 5-HTP or the L-tryptophan, the anger, the irritability, and the tendency towards violence will diminish because your brain is finally getting what it needs.
So how do you know? We have about 4 minutes, and I have another question about a different topic, so just remember that when I ask you this. How does that anger management person know whether it's a neurotransmitter issue or if it's a personal issue?
Well, I always believe in supporting neurotransmitters and removing food allergies. So I would start there, and if the anger and irritability is still present, then it is coming from developmental wounding or from a belief of what's that, entitlement.
So people in
pardon?
I never heard that. That was very interesting point, entitlement. I've never heard anybody connect it like that.
Yeah. A lot of people in domestic violence programs believe that they are entitled to their anger and to their violence. And that is not a neurotransmitter issue.
I guess that's a conditioning issue, huh?
That's a conditioning issue, yes.
Okay, my last question that if we even have time to get this, is niacin. You know, Abraham Hoffer focused his life's work mm-hmm. on niacin and addiction. What do you have to say about that? We've got about 2 minutes.
Niacin is a precursor to serotonin, and it helps people calm down, relax, and it also helps remove psychotic-type behavior. So for very many alcoholics, adding large amounts of niacin, up to 3 grams a day, can remove the symptoms that make you want to drink.
Interesting. Now, niacin, people's liver's enzymes go up when they take niacin. Is that a condition for an alcoholic or a drug addict to worry about, or is that really kind of like a not the same kind of indication as it, the conventional doctors think it is? Does that make sense?
It does. I don't completely know the answer to that. I like to err on the side of caution. And if your liver enzymes are already elevated into a danger state, then I would keep your niacin level at the lower end rather than the higher end.
Okay. All right, Christina, tell us one more time where you are, because we've got to get off the air tonight. That was an excellent piece of information that you provided us with tonight. Thank you.
Well, thank
you. Can we find you again?
Christina Veselak in Aurora, Colorado.
Spell it, please.
My last name,
last
is
name.
V as in Victor, E, S as in Sam, E, L-A-K.
Thank you, Christina. I hope you will come back again. This was fabulous information, and I'm
well,
grateful
thank
to have
you,
your
Eva.
Time.
I would love to. Bye-bye.
Good night.
Hi, this is Elliot Dasher, author of Integral Health.
Integral Health. Integral Health.
You can hear me and others speaking about consciousness and health.
Consciousness and health. Consciousness and health.
Just tune in every Sunday evening at 7 p.m.
7 p.m.
to Infinite Consciousness with Eva Hare.